governor and I, and we were all doing a tour of the library here, and talking about the significance of the passage of time, right? The significance of the passage of time. So when you think about it, there is great significance to the passage of time in terms of what we need to do to lay these wires, what we need to do to create these jobs. And there is such great significance to the passage of time when we think about a day in the life of our children.
Now's a time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there. And we've got to lead it. And we've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it.
Yep, that's right. Forget about those New World Order conspiracies. Just a bunch of gobbledygook at this point, I would assume. Nice Saturnalian symbolism there from Kamala Harris as well, of course, invoking the passage of time. Well, what is that significant? Well, that's, of course, significant in terms of the very god that holds the hourglass in some of the later depictions. That's Saturn, right? The Grim Reaper. That's death, essentially, but it's Saturn. That's what it is, right? Look in Roman or Greek mythology and you find everything out about it. So the passage of time, the significance of that. Remember the depictions or even the stories of Saturn eating his own children, right? But, you know, that's conspiracy gobbledygook. So who cares about that? It's nothing significant about that whatsoever. I'm sure it's just Kamala Harris channeling some from demon from beyond, telling us that that our time is up. I'm not sure. Will we be eating our children just like Saturn? Well, we'll see what happens. It's a bit of a theme here today because lentils will fix all of it, folks. Lab-grown meat and fish and lentils. New era, that's what we're in. Well, folks, before we get to some of the topics, I do appreciate you joining us. If you're new, I'm Henrik. This is Red Ice TV, and it is Wednesday, my dudes, and that's why we're doing No-Go Zone. If you're trying to watch on Odyssey, I do apologize. For some reason, we cannot start on Odyssey. I've been trying a number of times. That's why we're a bit late today. Let me try one last time here. Let me paste in that key, and let's go. If it doesn't work, I have to watch somewhere else. But anyway, do appreciate you joining us today. Hope you're having a wonderful time. So it was a pleasure having you with us. And if you want to join in the show today, enterprestream.live/RedIceTV. No, Odyssey is denying me here today for some reason, but that's why we got to a number of other places as well. Because if there's issues, you can always tune in somewhere else. We also have Rumble up and running. They do accept super chats. And I guess since Odyssey is down, it doesn't matter. I don't have to watch that stream today over there. But anyway, guys, thank you so much. Good to see all. Jimmy Fallis is here. Says it is Wednesday, my dudes, with a hashtag scum, Russian scum, and a hashtag smash with Scott. That's right. I don't think I have any of those in there. I have to bring those up later. Thank you, Jimmy. It's good to see you, man. I do appreciate you. So we had some important news here today. We had the former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, passing into the other realm, passing beyond this one into the next one. And the gods only knows which one of them she'll be going to. But we do want to remind you, if you do want to remember this wonderful Secretary of State, this is how she should be remembered.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
That's right. So when you think of Madeleine Albright, think of 500,000 of Iraqi kids. And of course, again, thank you to all the Zionists at the State Department and the CIA and AIPAC and all these organizations that have basically driven Iraqis out of Iraq and into Western countries such as mine, such as Sweden, because we, of course, were flooded by Iraqi refugees after the American invasions of this. Again, there's a glowing article here by CNN. Madeleine Albright, first female U.S. Secretary of State, dies. It's funny because we saw this some cringe wine ant the other day. I don't think I play the clip talking about how much better it was regarding Ukraine, but like how much better it would be if women ruled, and she was sitting there with her wine glass or whatever. It's like, I think it was like a study done on this back in must have been 2014, 15, maybe later, maybe a couple of years later, about how women, if they were in a position of power, and I mean, there was women rulers specifically, but you know, these days it's like prime ministers and presidents and stuff. But even high up positions such as this, Secretary of State, they were like 27% more likely to actually go to war than their male counterparts, which is quite something, right? Quite something. Madeleine Albright. And then, of course, I remember when she actually was in there and was like halfway along the line, or like at some point when she's gotten this position, it was like, it just turns out her grandparents had lied about her Jewish heritage. It turns out this is wonderful, wonderful lady. Let's focus on those superficial things, such as she is a woman, or how she has Jewish heritage and stuff. Meanwhile, killing 500,000 Iraqi... I mean, look, she didn't do it personally and front and center, but the fact is she defended it, right? She said, yes, it's worth it. That's the kind of leaders that we've been plagued with here over the last couple of centuries. Lycan Warrior says, Jamaicans call for slavery reparations as British royals visit. You know what? I saw a tweet about that, but Lycan includes a video here. Thank you for that. Let me do this. Let me put that in the flow, because we kind of have a little segment on all the anti-white, some of the anti-white stuff. It would actually be perfect for that. So thank you, Lycan. We'll pull that in. Just make a note about that real quick. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Always good to see you as well. And let me get to some of these other ones here real quick, and then we'll continue in the flow. JP says, type S and P in the chat for Madeleine Albright. That's right. I was going to say S in chat for to spit on Madeleine Albright. 500,000 Iraqi kids. But more Russia, though, right? Again, I don't like what Russia is doing. I don't like that they're bombing Ukraine, or even the military installations. If it was up to me, it would be no of these gay wars in any European countries. But that's what you have. And of course, you get a constantly signal, right, about how it was right to bomb Serbia into the Stone Age and stuff when America did. It was right to go into Iraq. It was right with the weapons of mass destruction lies. It was right with the anthrax lies of Colin Powell shaking this in front of the faces of the UN panel, right? All these things along the line, Kuwait, the babies in incubators, like the perpetual lying. Of the justification of going to war, killing countless civilians. I think it was, let's see, was it the Afghanistan war, right? I think it was something around estimated 120,000 to 200,000 civilians dead there. I could get the theater wrong. It might be another one, but I saw it just the other day. But that's fine. You know, that's totally fine. No problem there whatsoever. Anyway, S in chat. Thank you, JP. Spiteful mutants say their hubris will cause an inversion. Hail victory, hail the white race. Nature hates weakness, and so must we. Well, things are definitely, if there's something that's weak in these times, it will not only be exposed, it will probably crumble and fall right in front of our faces. It's absolutely crazy. Well, we got some other sad news, folks. Of course, you know about raging dissident Jeremy McKenzie over in Canada. He's been a guest a number of times on the show. And yesterday, he was, actually, I think it's might have been today. Let me see if we can get some details here. He was arrested. I think it's yesterday. We had the Fairman's Tool. He actually sent me a message earlier today. So thank you for watching, man. I appreciate that. Keeping up to speed. I wasn't aware of it. It was breaking here just a little bit earlier. Jeremy McKenzie, one of two people arrested by Halifax police. Yeah, and you know what this is about. We talked about the Diagonalon, you know, this joke that they made up or whatever, and then the Canadian authorities started taking it seriously. The politicians over there started talking about it like this was a known dangerous terrorist organization that's trying to overthrow the Canadian elected government, right? It's cringe just reading it, but just from the point of view of what they're pushing. The founder of a group that has been described, okay, well, by who? What do you mean? Anything has been described as anything by anybody. Is this any credence? Is this any weight behind this? No, of course not. It's just been described as an American-style militia movement was one of two arrested Tuesday. So yesterday was in relation to a recent protest at the home of Nova Scotia's Chief Medical Officer of Health. What was his name again? Strang, right? Robert Strang. Have we played... I am not sure if we have played any clips with Robert Strang. Let me see if I can find anything about that. RCMP and Halifax Regional Police said in a news release Wednesday, they've charged 36-year-old Jeremy Mitchell McKenzie of Pictou, blah, 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 and 31-year-old Morgan May Guptill of Cole Harbour with criminal harassment, mischief, harassing phone calls, and intimidation of a health professional. Intimidating phone calls? I'm sorry, what is that actually? Let me see, born Southern Rhodesia. Really, Dr. Robert Strang. I'm trying to see if I can find a picture here. Physician. I would assume it was over, like the COVID things, obviously, right? In the wake, there's another protest, of course, in Ottawa right now as well. It's somewhat smaller, but it's still there. Here it is. Here's Robert Strang, born in Rhodesia. How about that? Okay. RCMP Constable Guillaume Tremblay said the last charge, intimidation of health professionals, was introduced in January, specifically to respond to problems arising from the COVID-19. Okay, so interesting. It's a new type of charge, I guess, then. So what I heard was that there was other protesters there, but it was only Jeremy and Morgan that was targeted by this, as far as we understand the situation. There's no, you know, they could, of course, lie and make things up or whatever. But we assume at this point that there was no altercations. There was no specific things that they did differently from the rest of the crowd that was there. It was solely like just waiting for the excuse to arrest him, right? Because he's a leader of a dangerous white nationalist separatist nation. I'm laughing, and we shouldn't really. This is beyond gay, and it's serious. And it basically means that if you make too many jokes online, they'll come and arrest you. That's basically what it means. And this is not a big surprise. So they have a bail hearing. They had it actually tomorrow first scheduled, but it's been moved up to Friday. I'm sure that's too, so they can make up some more faulty accusations or charges or something. I'm not sure. The charges comes after 3 days of protest outside the Falls River, Nova Scotia home of Dr. Robert Strang that started Sunday. Strang also said people prank called him until 2 a.m. Well, there you go. That's just, you cannot possibly unplug your phone or whatever and then change your phone number. That is arrest worthy right there. If you call and say, hey, Dr. Strang, how's it going? Have you done your PCR tests yet? Police said they arrested McKenzie and Guptill on Pleasant Street in the Woolside area of Dartmouth Tuesday evening whilst protests continued outside. So, see again, they were just them targeted, right? What the hell is this about? Well, we know what it's about. When police informed protesters of the pair had been arrested, they left. Okay, the police then? So they didn't disperse the others? Interesting. Dr. Strang wished to pass along his sincere thanks to law enforcement for their action in addressing the incidents taking place outside of his home. As this is now a matter before the courts, he will not be commenting further. Nova Scotia Health Department spokesperson Marla McInnes said in an email. So they appeared virtually, they say here, the couple in Dartmouth Provincial Court on Wednesday, where the Crown opposed their release from police custody. Look at that. There was America, whatnot, right? But what was it? Was it the protester who drove over a few in, was it Manitoba? Am I wrong? Was he not released on bail, that guy? I think, was he not? And there was another guy, right, who targeted... What was it he did? He shot someone, right? He shot at kids or something like that in the U.S. and he was like released on bail. They were ordered to remain in custody and a bail hearing has been scheduled for Friday morning in the same court. Both are accused under orders to have no contact with Strang or his family. Yeah, because they think they're going to kill him otherwise, right? And then here we go. Diagonal, a white nationalist movement, says professor. Okay, well, good. David Hoffman. What is he associated with here? Can we get something on this? University of New Brunswick. Okay, I'm sure it's like, what was it called again in Canada? Anti-hate. Wasn't it them who like made up every single charge against them, right? Absolute gay. Well, my condolences. This is not funny. He's a veteran and he has PTSD, so therefore he has mental issues, right? Obviously, I'm not saying he hasn't suffered because of these gay wars where he was roped into as well in the Middle East. But I mean, if you watch him and stuff, it's clear that he's like, you know, upbeat kind of guy. He's, you know, good sense of humor. He's doing very well, right? He has a fun time doing his shows and stuff. But no, that's what it is now. Absolutely. Oh, he was outspoken about COVID-19 restrictions. Well, that's basically outlawed right there. All right. Okay. So we will keep following this, and hopefully we will have them out soon. There won't be an issue. They will have their charges dropped, because obviously if other people protesting and if their behavior didn't deviate from anyone else, why were they arrested as opposed to someone else? However, I fear that they will extend this and they will continue to harass Jeremy on every single level that they can. So we hope he's out soon. Anyway, we'll keep following that. Absolutely crazy. Cocaine Rim Job says, can someone please super chat Henrik and mention that Zegrak was out on a 48 hours of bail? Yes, and Jeremy and Morgan will be in for a minimum of 72 hours. Yes, Zegrak was the Fairman. Yeah, okay, that's a message from Fairman. Thank you. Exactly, right? Zegrak, right? That was the guy who drove over the people in Manitoba. I didn't have all the details, but it was a suspicion that that's what was happening. Is he out altogether now? Zegrak, Canada truck positive and run suspect in Antifa. Let me see here. Debbie Zegrak, motive and cover up. Let me see here. Is he out? So any news stories about this? Maybe I'll try to pull this up while we like play another video. I don't want dead air here, but yeah, thank you, Fairman. Very kind of you. And thank you to Cocaine Rim Job as well for passing that on. I appreciate that. Absolutely insane. Clearly harassment, clearly targeting Jeremy and the other guys associated with this group, right? Was Plaid Army previous. I mean, still that, right, in a certain extent, but they've changed to Diagonal because it was even more fun. It was even more, like, ridiculous in a way, right? Absolutely insane. All right, so let's switch over and talk a little bit about the new Supreme Court nominee here in the U.S. Ketanji Brown Jackson is her name, right? And remember what they did, the hoops and the circus that was around both, of course, Kavanaugh, the nominee of Kavanaugh. He eventually got in. It's not that these is, look, they're not different in any way. I'm not trying to say, oh, just because they're harassed by Democrats or the left that somehow they're like, you know, good patriots or something. Obviously, no, that did turn out to be bullshit. And then was Amy Coney Barrett after that. It was the same thing. I think Kavanaugh was even worse. But it was still a circus around Amy Coney Barrett, right? So it opened very weak, this whole the hearings and stuff, right? Listen to what Ted Cruz say here. And it's like, this is how, you know, conservative. Now, he took a turn for the better, so we'll get there. But this is what we got first. I was like, oh, no. It's like, are we going to take the high road here? We're not going to ask you any deep, difficult questions. That's what I thought that this was going. This is what Ted Cruz said.
No one is going to inquire into your teenage dating habits. No one is going to ask you with mock severity, do you like beer?
That's a making a joke of the
Kavanaugh
hearing,
right?
That's
not to say this hearing should be non-substantive and non-vigorous.
No. And again, it got better, but this is like, we're going to take the high ground here. Like, look, if you're, you know, I'm not trying to pose that this is some Democrat versus Republican battle here, because it truly is not. It's about sanity and normalcy versus just idiocy, degeneracy, and utter just destruction, right? And you get that on both, obviously, on every political side these days in faction. But again, it's this idea that it's like, oh, Republic, you know, we're going to take the high road. We're not going to make it difficult for you like the left did. It's like, oh, is that how you win by taking the high road? Look, you got to play not only dirty, as dirty and worse than your political opponents do these days. That's just how it goes, right? So it got better, though. We had some questions here regarding, for example, just one example. What is a woman? And this was apparently very hard for them to ask, listen, or answer, for her to answer. Listen to this.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
The meaning of the word woman is so unclear and controversial that you can't give me a definition?
Senator, in my work as a judge, what I do is I address disputes. If there's a dispute about a definition, people make arguments, and I look at the law and I decide.
Well,
so I'm not.
The fact that you can't give me a straight answer about something as fundamental as what a woman is underscores the dangers of the kind of progressive education that we are hearing about. Just last week, an entire generation of young girls watched as our taxpayer-funded institutions permitted a biological man to compete and beat a biological woman in the NCAA swimming championships. What message do you think this sends to girls who aspire to compete and win in sports at the highest levels?
Let's see.
Senator, I'm not sure what message that sends. If you're asking me about the legal issues related to it, those are topics that are being hotly discussed, as you say, and could come to the court.
Is it not a legal definition what a man and a woman is? Even if, like, based on, I don't know, let's say discrimination laws or, you know, whatever dumb thing that they have now that's like that clearly then separates the races so that you can treat things differently under the law. Wouldn't that be a legal thing? What even is? How can you not answer that, right? But again, and, you know, again, to his credit, Ted Cruz stepped up a little bit here. Jimmy Fallon points to Marsha Blackburn. She's done a bunch of like dumb things. I mean, occasionally she's done some good things, bringing up some good things. But you get this is the same thing, the same story every time with these people, these Republicans, these conservatives. They come in and they talk a big game where they're going to expose someone or push them up against the wall, but nothing ever happens. You know, it's like, oh yeah, you show him Tom Cotton or like whoever it is, right? But anyway, so we'll take what we get here. It's scrap crumbs off the table. That's basically what it is at this point. But Ted Cruz did ask her about critical race theory and like all this just incredibly like anti-white stuff that's in the books, right? Check this video out here. And the follow-up is, or the last question that they ask in the book is quite interesting too. Imagine asking that about any other group than white people. Listen to this.
Another portion of the book, they recommend the babies confess when being racist.
And what babies is it on the picture? It's Hawaii babies. And of course, Ted doesn't say anything about that.
Now, this is a book that is taught at Georgetown Day School to students in pre-K through second grade.
And I think this is Ibram X. Kendi's book, Anti-Racist Baby, right?
Through 7 years old. Do you agree with this book that is being taught with kids that babies are racist?
Senator, I do not believe that any child should be made to feel as though they are racist or though they are not valued or though they are less than, that they are victims, that they are oppressors. I don't believe in any of that. But what I will say is that when you asked me whether or not this was taught in schools, critical race theory, my understanding is that critical race theory as an academic theory is taught in law schools.
They get into hair splitting and a definition issue, right? Oh, is it really critical race? This is why it kind of defeats to use the term. Here's the book, by the way. It's Anti-Racist Baby by Ibram X. Kendi and Ashley Lukashevsky. ding, 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 and hair splitting over the definition, right? Well, is it really critical race theory? Well, no, it's not, because that's just in law school. It's like, okay, well, obviously it's anti-white garbage and it's hate. Are you going to continue to teach that or not, right? Or do you think this is good? Is it legally, like, should this be permitted, right? Anyway, continue, sir.
That you were asking the question, I understood you to be addressing public schools. Georgetown Day School, just like the religious school that Justice Barrett was on the board of, is a private school.
Okay, so you agree critical race theory is taught at Georgetown Day School?
I don't know, because the board is not, the board does not control the curriculum. The board does not focus on that. That's not what we do as board members. So I'm actually not sure.
Well, and I'll note that the board is chaired by Professor Fairfax, your college roommate who introduced you yesterday. So the two of you serve on the board together. Another book that is on the summer reading for 3rd through 5th grade is a book called Stamp for Kids, again by Ibram Kendi. I read the entirety of the book, and I will say it is an astonishing book. On page 33, it asks the question,
can we have Africans go back to Africa?
Can we send white people back to Europe?
Imagine if there was a book out there, you know, because now the leftists, right, and even the neoliberals at this point, are starting to kvetch about free speech. Oh, it's free speech. They're violating free speech now. We can't teach blowjobs to 4th graders. What's going on? We can't tell them about, trans medication, what do you call it, hormone blockers and gender reassignment surgery, how to have sex with 20 to 25-year-olds, right? Wasn't that one, I forget what the book was called again, dog, something with a dog or whatever. But can you imagine? Can we send back Arabs to the Middle East? A book about that. Do you think it would be censored? I'm not sure. Hard to say. Would it be taught in public schools? I don't know. Tough call, you know? All right. So, of course, it gets worse, right? Of course it gets worse. Always gets worse. Here is a story regarding, let's read it here. Joe Biden's Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson's extensive 25-year-old long judicial record reveals she long advocated for softening punishments for sexual predators of children, in other words, pedophiles. This is according to attorney and Article 3 Project founder Mike Davis. Appearing on Steve Bannon's War Room on Monday, Davis explained that the left attempts to characterize criticism of Jackson's questionable record as smears and that they're unfounded because Jackson's own legacy record speaks for itself. I'm sure it does, right? Ketanji Brown Jackson has a 25-year history of advocating for less punishment for sexual predators of kids, Davis said, first noting Jackson's Harvard Law School publication arguing that sex offender registry laws are unconstitutional. We're not going to listen to this, like 8 minutes long, so I'm just going to read a little bit from it here. Davis went on to highlight how, as vice chair of the Sentencing Commission, Jackson had directed the commission to investigate child pornography cases, which make up less than 2% of the federal crime docket. And can you, like, it probably should be like 50% at this point, considering how many pedophiles there is out there. She took it on her own initiative to look into these federal sentences for people who possess and distribute child pornography, he noted, adding that pointing these instances out is not a smear. It is her public record, Davis says. It's her public statements, it's transcripts of her hearings at the Sentencing Commission. Davis then outlined at least 7 instances of Jackson as a federal judge going soft on the child sex predators, including one instance where the guy should have gotten up to 120 years in prison. She gave him 3 months. Interesting. Davis claimed that the Democrats should have found these questionable aspects of Jackson's record before putting her up for confirmation, and noted that Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Dick Durbin has been deliberately hiding her record. Yeah, big surprise. So you're telling me they want a pro-pedophile, a pedophile-positive position on SCOTUS? Imagine my shock, right? And as dumb and cringe as he is, Again, for this once, to his credit, I guess Lindsey Graham at least asked some questions about it. Let's listen to those.
It's we're differentiating among defendants. So in a world in which the mail is used for the purpose of distribution, it really matters whether the person has distributed one or five or 1,000. And so the guideline says, you know what? We are going to treat a person who's distributed 1,000 a lot worse, because that shows that this person is really engaged in this really horrible behavior. In comes the internet. On the internet, with one click, you can receive, you can distribute tens of thousands. You can be doing this for 15 minutes, and all of a sudden, you are looking at 30, 40, 50 years in prison.
Yeah, and?
Good.
Cut.
Good.
I understand.
Based. Bates. Lindsey. Hell, what the hell happened?
Absolutely good. I hope you are.
To do.
Good.
Allow her to finish, please.
I hope you go to jail for 50 years if you're on the internet trolling for images please. Of children in sexual exploitation. So you don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a horrible thing.
What happened? Did the guy grow a spine? What the hell?
Senator, with respect to the computer, one of the most effective deterrents is one that I imposed in every case and that judges across the country impose in every case, which is substantial supervision. Any of these defendants.
You think it is a bigger deterrent to take somebody who's on a computer looking at sexual images of children in the most disgusting way is to supervise their computer habits versus putting them in jail?
No, Senator, I didn't say versus.
That's exactly what you said. I think the best way to deter people from getting on a computer and viewing thousands and hundreds and over time, maybe millions, the population as a whole, of children being exploited and abused every time somebody clicks on is to put their ass in jail, not supervise their computer usage.
Senator, I wasn't talking about versus.
You just said you thought it was a deterrent to supervise them. I don't think it's a deterrent. I think the deterrent is putting them in jail.
Senator,
the sentencing
have
a deterrent component.
Senator, would you let her respond?
Why even put them in jail? I mean, if it can be proven beyond reasonable doubt, you know, unless because it could be like, let's assume it's like some... What's some gay op hacking or like someone, I don't know, whatever. Someone clicks a link and it's a torrent or something and it's child porn on there and they get framed or something, right? Let's assume it's not that, but it's actually, you know, like beyond any shadow of a doubt, you can prove that they like downloaded, distributed, they're getting off on this shit. Why even put them in jail at this point? Let's just give them capital punishment. How about that? Why should we even pay for these people, right? But that's what you get. On the far left, that's what you get with these commies, right? It's the constant defense of pedophilia and sex with children. It's just never, it never stops. They have to go there. It's the only thing they have. It's what they want. They want to pervert and destroy and like ruin the innocence of these kids because they get off on that. They like it. Reminder.
It is possible for an adult and a child to have a sexual relationship and for it to have positive outcomes on the child as well. That is possible.
That's your average promoted YouTuber right there in 20, or well, maybe it's 2021, that clip, but you get the idea, right? Let's keep at it with Mr. Graham here.
Yes. Does sentencing have a deterrent component?
Yes, Senator. Deterrence is one of the purposes of punishment, and Congress has directed courts to consider various means of achieving deterrence. One of them, as you said, is incarceration. Another, as I tried to mention, was substantial periods of supervision once the person...
So if I could, may ask you...
And you know that that's going to go to like, well, surveillance standards, or maybe they're talking about like a person that's already convicted or whatever... Graham, if you're on a computer right now looking at a kid in a sexual compromising situation and you get caught, I hope nobody gives you a break because you used a computer.
You always were under the recommendation of the prosecutor, many times the parole people. And to be honest with you, Judge, 32-year-old man who sent an image of his own 10-year-old daughter. You substantially reduced the not only the guidelines, but the recommendation. And all I can say is that your view of how to deter child pornography is not my view. I think you're doing it wrong, and every judge who does what you're doing is making it easier for the children to be exploited. If you're on a computer right now looking at a kid in a sexually compromising situation and you get caught, I hope nobody gives you a break because you used the computer.
The conduct that's been described is reprehensible, and I think everyone in this room agrees. And the fact of the matter is that I'm co-sponsor of your bill, the Earn It Act, and I believe that we should be doing our job here.
But so far, right? Was it introductions in the EU and stuff, like to remove anonymity online and stuff? Like they're using, while they're actually like sexualizing kids, promoting the whole global homo system is right, sexualizing kids, promoting this as something good, pitch, you know, over the top sexual things to, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4th graders, 5th graders, like teaching them blowjob. You know, we've been over this now time and time again, right? Then at the same time, they're using the protection of kids as the excuse to clamp down on, for example, anonymity online or censorship, where you need to be blocked or frozen out if you, you know, we need to control the internet, basically. That's what they're saying. We need to control the internet and all information flows so that we can protect the kids when it comes to child pornography. So they're using that as an excuse while they're pushing sexualization on kids, right? So complete bullshit. Of an excuse. And if they really wanted to protect kids, well, there's a million things they could do, right? Million things. Start with removing all the sexualization of kids in schools. But begin there. That's just one thing, right? Go after pedophiles, actually investigate why. There's still not a single person technically, right? Ghislaine Maxwell, right? But they might appeal that now. That's going to go, it's going to be a retrial. Who knows what's going to happen there? But the whole scandal with Jeffrey Epstein and stuff, what, there's not a, as far as I know, right, I'll take that back. Technically, Jean-Luc Brunel, he was in prison for a while until he was killed, but there was no trial. I don't think they ended up getting to trial, right? But otherwise, the whole network around that, the big players around all that, the whole Epstein network, none of them is in jail. What do you begin there, for example, right? Actually put some people in, not only in jail, severe punishment, capital punishment, and show the rest of the world that if you diddled with these kinds of things, you're going to get hurt bad, okay?
Part of our job, we have failed in responding to the changing circumstances that face this crime. What has it been, 15 or 16 years? She is currently not an outlier in sentencing. 70% of the federal judges face the same dilemma and wonder why Congress has failed to act and when it will act.
This is our fault?
Partially it is, Senator. To be honest with you, it is. We have to upgrade these guidelines and decide whether we're going to stick with the Supreme Court decision that they're not mandatory.
All right. You get the idea, right? Is there more here? Yeah, I think that's it. Okay. Anyway, so good stuff, right? At least we got some, you know, teeth from Graham. But again, it's as usual. It's just for show, right? It's just for show. Archie says, Ibrahim X. Kendi has white allies in Alberta, October 2019, at a climate march that included Greta Thunberg, right? Little White Luke said that whites must be sent back to Europe. Watch from seven. Okay, interesting. All right, let me find that. I have not seen that. Thank you for the timestamp there, too. I appreciate that. 1714. Okay, let me find that. Was that one of the, like, the native? Oh, wait, did we see this at some point? Here we go.
The genocide of Indigenous peoples in Canada may seem like ancient history, but the continued oppression and their struggle against oppression are very much ongoing. When we strive for a solution to the climate crisis in Canada, we must also simultaneously address the need for decolonization and repatriation.
Repatriation. Yeah, send everybody back. Give the nations back to the indigenous, because they built it. Yeah, there you go. Was he on stage there too? I guess you mean white allies, I guess, just generally saying it was related to Ibrahim X. Kendi. But Greta, that was there though, right? She was there at this meeting, I think. Yeah, there she is, right there. I think we played some of this at the time. God almighty. All right. Thank you for that, Archie. That's a good clip. We got to keep that. Oh, no, of course. I mean, they can repatriate us at any point. Absolutely legitimate. Not a big problem. In fact, we should play the that Jamaican clip, too. And we have this, by the way, another one. Boston mayor. What's her name again? Michelle Wu. Listen to this. Listen to her anti-white rhetoric here. You might have seen this before, but check this out. This was on St. Patrick's Day.
Over 100 days, we have connected unhoused residents at Mass and Cass to housing, treatment, and services. We've launched 3 free bus lines. We've taken some big, bold actions, but I won't lie. This past winter was pretty intense. Trial by snow, trial by fire, fighters union. I'm getting used to dealing with problems that are expensive, disruptive, and white. I'm talking about snowflakes. Snowflakes. I mean snowstorm snowflakes.
Yeah. All right. Whatever. Whatever, bitch. Anti-white harlot. As usual, they're all anti-white. All anti-white. They get in and they get brazen in their anti-whiteness. And of course, that's fine. Imagine them having a joke about that. Oh, I'm talking about... you know, whatever it is. I'm talking about coffee beans or something. I'm not the brown problem, right? Or whatever. Imagine what would happen. Just imagine the circus around that, right? But everybody can shit on white people 24/7. No one's going to bat an eye. Look, some of them are getting finally criticism about the whole anti-white machine that's in huge motion. And if this continues, it will be a hell hole in the West, in America, in many European countries for white people. When and if we get, I mean, it's bad now. Imagine when we are a minority. That's why we cannot allow that to happen. It will not happen, right? All right, so here's the clip here from Lycan Warrior regarding Jamaica. I saw it in passing. I was like, am I going to cover that? I was like, yeah, it's, you know, maybe not a biggie. But I think it's actually really important because you get a lot of push for this. And I think England has, like, floated these things before, right? I mean, we're paying so much in aid already that this whole thing about reparations is basically like 10 times over, a million times over. And now we also have to let all the people in from it, although they have nothing to do with slavery and all that stuff, right? Anyway, let's listen to the clip here.
Sending a shout out to the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge and the entire royal family that reparation time come now.
They got all that. They got so much money from that. Who paid? Look. This is obviously dumb because it's like they're pretending that they're the only ones that have been enslaved, first of all, and then that money is going to fix it all. And because we are in a bad spot now, it's white people's fault. Like, look, we get all that. And obviously, in hindsight, slavery was the dumbest thing that ever happened. Look at the animal now, right? But then at the same time, you could go back to West Africa then, or presumably where you came from, right? And it's only, of course, white people. It's not for example, what happened with the people that actually financially benefited from it, right? No, because it was not free labor, right? They purchased these slaves in many regards at a very high price. I think one video we did, I did just a general calculation, what we knew at the time, at the height of slavery, how much money you made as a working general, like working wage, right? If you're like a lower class, just grunt, you know, And, you know, for how many years, I forget the exact math, but it basically broke down to like, you didn't get free labor because the price of the slave was as much as like 20 years worth of wages for a person you would pay or something like that, right? So someone who oversaw the transatlantic slave trade is, of course, the ones that benefited the most financially from the situation, right? Because they got, in that sense, they have neighboring African tribes capturing other neighboring African tribes, overseeing it by the Muslim population. And yes, in many regards, there were Jews that owned the ships, and they're the ones who acted as merchants, both on the selling and on the purchasing side and the selling side, the sending and the receiving side, right? But let's not go. Nah, that's details. Whitey, you gotta pay, right? Always the same thing. When are we going to get reparations for the Barbary slave trade? Or the Icelandic people, the English people that were captured, the Irish people, right?
It's an insult to us, for these young people to be here to try to persuade us to keep the status quo in place when our goal is to loosen and remove the hands, the gloved hands of the Queen from around our necks.
I think Jamaica is part of the Commonwealth, right? I think that's the case, right? Jamaica, I think they're part of that, right? The Commonwealth. Yeah, they're part of the Commonwealth. So disconnect from that then. Excuse me. Disconnect from that first. Cut off all the aid and sever yourself from England, right? No, of course not. They want that dependency. They want aid. They want help. Now they want reparations, right? We'll just never end.
So that we can breathe.
So that we can breathe. I can't breathe. All right. Anyway, thank you for sending that. Of course, it's Al Jazeera. Of course, you get a shit on whites, white people on Al Jazeera. Thank you, Lycan. That was a great clip. Now we talked about the pedophile stuff there too. Someone posted this meme. This is an actual meme. I believe like back in 2011. That's when gay marriage was legalized. Remember the first term of Obama, he said, no, we're not gonna have that. We're not doing that. Then year two, second term, they got it through. And I remember that the whole White House was painted in colors and stuff, right? Was it 20? I think I was in the U.S. then. Let me just check that real quick. When was gay marriage legalized? Okay, there we go. November 2012. Okay, so I was wrong. 2011. Okay, regardless, the meme might be from 2011, but it was like, yeah, 2012 at the end of 2012. Because I remember they lit up like the White House and the rainbow colors and all that stuff, like the House of Many Colors. I guess the dark MAGA thing is going around now? They're going to paint the White House black or something when... when Zogenhold gets back in. All right. Anyway, so what will happen if gay marriage is legalized? Gay people will get married, and then they had a third world war would break out. Like, oh no, none of these things happen. Of course, we're at the brink of this right now. Of course, various plagues, locust, frogs, etc., will erupt. Well, we're close to eating them at least. Schools will begin teaching kids how to have gay sex. Yeah, that totally didn't happen. The terrorists will win. Well, didn't they? They're the ones running our country. And I redid it. So we did this one. I guess it's an equal. It's a quartering here of the 100% circle, right? Gay people will, of course, get married, but that's not the big thing. That's not what happened. Now we have gender reassignment surgery pushed on 10-year-olds and youngers. Transgenderism has become virtually a religion. Schools have begun teaching kids how to have gay sex and the trans sex, and they will teach blowjobs to fourth graders. And do you think that that's actually like a joke or something? No, that's basically where we are right now. That's basically where we are. And that's how quickly it's slid down the tracks, right? And then you had that other interesting thing. Maybe we can find that. It was the issue regarding basically pedophilia, right? Let's see if I can find that. Yeah, was it an open secret, right? Look at this one. This is child sexual abuse as one possible cause of homosexuality. LGBTs report childhood sex abuse at 3 to 8 times the rate of heterosexuals. So could it be that we have a LGBTQ epidemic because we have a pedophile epidemic, right? We know that that's spreading like wildfire. It's exponential growth, because the more they suffer from this, they go on to pass this down to other kids, kids they know, their own kids, kids they don't know, right? It's kind of a weird thing. It's like as a way to deal with their own trauma, they just continue. They continue the cycle of abuse. But anyway, Dornbecker's Children's Hospital in Portland, Oregon, has a detailed guide on tucking for kids. At the end, they also refer to children to a sex toy shop for gender-affirming items. Yes, this is an actual thing. What is tucking? It says here. Tucking is moving the penis, testicles, and both out of the way. This makes the genital area look smoother and flatter. We're literally in that, like, damn it, I should have pulled up some pictures of this, but like, what was it? The guy that's being targeted for sexual harassment now, ironically, which is kind of funny, but what the hell is his name? Marilyn Manson, right? Remember those music videos with Marilyn Manson? Isn't that what we are? Remember they had it was one of his videos, he had like a smooth bulge, right? It's like this androgynous thing, right, where you get closer to God. They think that we're going to become like the gods and that therefore you have to be androgynous, right? It basically connotes you're outside of the realm of nature, right? You're beyond the physical. You're a god. You're a godly entity. You're a higher spiritual being because you're not divided by the rules of nature. You're above that, right? Transcendental. It's like, you know, that's why you get some of that shit in like religions and stuff. But it doesn't mean that we should do it as humans. It doesn't mean you have to have a smooth area where your penis is, especially not for kids. What the hell is going on? Tucking can reduce any concerns you have about your body, okay? How your clothes will fit and how safe you will feel in public. People of all genders can tuck. Oh yeah, so females can tuck away their penis and testicles as well. Okay, that makes total sense. And then they have a graphic depiction here down there. I'm sorry, what the hell is going on here? Are they telling you to literally tuck it up under inside of the skin? Or what are they? Look, I don't even want to know. Risk of tucking. Yeah, what is that? Risk of tucking. Tucking does have some risks. These include urinary tract infections, problem with urine flow, and twisting or inflammation in the testicles. If you had any of these problems, stop tucking until you can talk with your doctor. Hey, doc, I really want to tuck badly, okay? I mean, this is a kid saying this, right? You can lower your chances of these things happening by not tucking for very long at a time and untucking as often as you can. Holy fucking crap. Alternative, yeah, Shebop, right? In the Portland area. Shebop is a sex-positive shop in Portland. They sell gender-affirming clothing items as well as sex toys, videos, and more. The shop is for people aged 18 and older, but they offer appointments before or after hours for younger shoppers. You can schedule an appointment by calling or emailing. So there you go. Children's hospitals are now proposing that you put away your testicles. Good times. All right. We're totally in a good space. I mean, these are just, I mean, in a way, in terms of where we are going and where we're heading, these are just distractions, essentially. I mean, it needs to be stopped. It's horrific. It's horrendous. The people promoting this should be fired. They should be pushed back into the closet, whatever you want to call it, right? But ultimately, the big shit that's happening here now is basically a breakdown of our civilization. And partially it's at the hands of this. Like, we've just dropped the ball altogether, collectively speaking, as a civilization. And now we're talking about tucking kids' genitals as opposed to dealing with, like, real issues, such as, I don't know, growing food. How about that? Can we grow food? Can we be on good terms with countries that we are dependent on for oil and energy as one for one, right? No, of course not. Can't have that. So switching a little bit here. Biden is going over to Europe now. He's on a trip heading towards Germany. I don't think he's spoken there yet. I guess tomorrow will be some things happening there. Now there's people talking about assassination, all kinds of crazy things. We'll see what happens here. But Biden's trip to Europe is one of the highest stakes presidential trips in recent memory. Here's why, CNN says. His visit to Brussels and Poland could still underscore the alliance, right? Speaking about like NATO and shit like that. Alliance limits in ending the bloodshed in Ukraine, with Western leaders struggling to find ways to halt Russian President Vladimir Putin's war. So far, punishing Western sanctions haven't stopped Putin. Yeah, it's just shooting ourselves in the foot, basically. And it's unclear whether the next steps are expected this week, including sanctions on hundreds of members of Russia's lower legislative body and changes to NATO's force posture along its edge or eastern edge. And that will be difficult. Yet, as he departed the White House early Wednesday, Biden appeared intent on using his last-minute wartime visit to Europe to send a message. Asked what he had to say to his partners, Biden said he'd wait to deliver it face to face. All I have to say, I'm going to say it when I get there, he said before boarding a 7-hour flight to Belgium. So that's coming up. So that's some more on that tomorrow. And of course, some other stuff that they're pushing right now hard is regarding the cyber attack, right? It's been quite advantageous for the U.S. and even for Europe to use the conflict in Ukraine and Russia as an excuse for why things are basically collapsing. From the gas prices to the inflation, things that were already moving, right? It was a dirty snowball after COVID, after the lockdowns, after accumulating all this wealth to like the mega, mega rich already, the big corporations putting businesses out of business, mom and pops for the most part, small businesses, independently owned and so forth, shutting down the economy, causing supply chain issues, having people sit home and order, garbage products that takes up everything, right? So that whole thing was already in motion. And then this conflict comes along, exacerbates it, plays into it, makes it even worse, just like they want, by design. And of course, now they're saying, well, Russia is also, by the way, going to do a cyber attack on us, the U.S., and basically we'll shut down everything, the infrastructure. This is what Biden said here. The
administration has issued new warnings that based on evolving intelligence, Russia may be planning a cyber attack against us. And as I said, the magnitude of Russia's cyber capacity is fairly consequential, and it's coming. The federal government is doing its part to get ready. But under U.S. law, as you all remember, the private sector, all of you, largely decides the protections that is you will or will not take in order to protect your sources. But let me be absolutely clear about something. It's not just in your interest that are at stake when there is potential use of cybersecurity. It is the national interest at stake. And I would respectfully suggest that
Let me continue that.
You've got an obligation for you to invest as much as you can in making sure, and we will will help in any way.
We're gonna get Skippy Biden here now. Let's go.
That you have built up.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we get more of this here. But you get the point, right? So cyber attack. We have others talking about this too. Here's the White House spokesperson. This is a new lady. I haven't seen her before. How the Russian government is exploring options for potential cyber attacks on critical infrastructure in the U.S.
Urging private sector partners to take immediate action to shore up their defenses against potential cyber attacks. We've previously warned about the potential for Russia to conduct cyber attacks against the United States, including as a response to the unprecedented economic costs that the U.S. and allies and partners impose in response to Russia's further invasion of Ukraine. Today, we are reiterating those warnings, and we're doing so based on evolving threat intelligence, that the Russian government is exploring options for potential cyber attacks on critical infrastructure in the United States.
All right. So basically, this would be perfect, right? Because, you know, we've talked about Operation Cyber Polygon. We've talked about some of these other drills, World Economic Forum run, right? We need constantly hear talks about how vulnerable the infrastructure is, kind of teeing up the whole scenario here, right? In a way of like, you know, putting the ball right there and like, let's knock this out. And if there is an attack, even if it was self-inflicted, even if it was a covert military operation or a drill by other groups or an international group or something, they would, of course, immediately blame Putin, right, and Russia, even if it actually wasn't them doing it. But remember this from last summer? We talked about it at the time. Biden gives Putin a list of 16 critical infrastructure entities that must be off limits to cyber attacks. Is that really the best thing? Here, Putin, here's a list of 16 items that you absolutely cannot, for the love of God, do not attack these specific big infrastructure entities that we have, right? Thanks, Joe. President Joe Biden told reporters Wednesday, this is back in June 2021, that he gave Russian President Vladimir Putin a list of 16 critical infrastructure entities that must be off limits to cyber attacks, and hinted at major retaliation from the United States should Russia allow continued malign activity in the sphere. What sphere is that, Biden? And of course, there was comment in this after that, but that's basically saying like, yeah, these are vulnerable, this is critical, we need this for stability, here you go. Okay, so anyway, Psaki was asked about this back in June 2021.
Thank you. The president's been criticized for giving Putin a list of 16 critical infrastructure targets that's considered off limits to cyber attacks. How did that idea come about? And why not tell Putin that everything inside of the United States is off limits?
Well, first, I don't think it required the president providing a list for President Putin or Russia to determine what is critical infrastructure in the United States. I know that has been part of the conspiracy response to his proposal. The president was being clear. These are areas where, we will be watching, and we will reserve the option of consequences. That was the message he was sending during that meeting, and it's why he put forward those specific examples.
Why didn't he give Putin a list of targets inside of Russia that the United States would target if another cyber attack does take place in the United States?
Because we don't preview our punches.
Ooh. All right. Well, this is still very dumb, despite her little dumb, cocky answer at the end there. You're basically saying, here, attack this, please, right? That's kind of, that's what they're doing, right? This is classic. Here, pick up the gun. What was that line by Bill Hicks, right? To kind of the explanation of what America has been doing in many of these countries around the world. Pick up the gun, right? And then they pick it up to defend themselves. And he had a gun. Anyway, Odyssey, I think, is working for now. I tried to start up again, so welcome if you're joining us on Odyssey. Again, we had issues for some reason starting it earlier. So anyway, if you missed half of the show, check out the archives. It will go up everywhere on our channels, of course, as usual. All right. So that's gonna be great. That's going to go down real well. We're going to be in a new territory here soon. If and when there's some kind of attack on, like, you know, the electrical grid or the internet or something. And again, can you imagine if they just shut down communication completely or the power grid goes down? And it's like, yeah, but it was Putin. Let the nukes fly, right? And we'll get to more on that in a little bit here. We have more on that. But this is kind of interesting, too. Of course, Ukraine is, you know, fighting for the freedom and democracy, right? It's all about democracy. Heard this now. They're violating their democratic rights in Ukraine. Well, now he's the Zionist over there. Zelensky has nationalized several TV news stations. In other words, taking control of them. just supposedly, isn't this what Russia has been accused of doing, right? And then he's also restricted opposition parties. This is your democratic, frontline democratic nation right now. On Saturday and Sunday, Ukrainian President Zelensky invoked his emergency powers under martial law to suppress several opposition political parties and implementing a unified information policy. they've already had that, essentially. But in the whole war, the whole terror, the war on information, let's say the propaganda war, they have been exemplary. And part of that, of course, is because they're getting help from some of the best, right? They're getting help from Washington and Tel Aviv and the Pentagon and CIA and the DOD and all these entities. And in fact, I want to play this clip again because it's so indicative of how they view what has been happening in Ukraine when it comes to the admiration that they have. I'm looking for the clip here now. And it has, it's an MSNBC producer, a guy who's on there, a guest, I forget his name now, talking about just the admiration of what they've done and how wonderful the Ukraine's response and the information war has been. And also, of course, at the same time admitting, don't we have that clip? Admitting that it's a bunch of ex-television producers that's basically handling the whole information campaign over there. It's like literally wagging the dog, right? That's what's so crazy about it. And then, of course, he was shot in front of his green screen the other day, right? Let me see. Where the hell is that clip? I can't find it now. That's too bad. I could have sworn I had it here. Okay, well, I'll try to pull it up here in a little bit. I could have sworn I had it here. The information war thing. Okay, I'll find it in a moment. It's just perfect the way he delivers it and the admiration and this kind of cartoonish view too, of the conflict and the war. It's all like Darth Vader. Putin is Darth Vader, and therefore Zelensky is Luke Skywalker. It's like this spandex Marvel heroes, lens basically that they're viewing everything from. I can't believe it. It's quite something, quite something. Anyway, I'll find that in a moment. I'm not sure where it is. It should be in my folder here, but it's not. Anyway, let me continue reading here then. In an address to the nation delivered Sunday, Zelensky announced a temporary, it's just temporary. Don't worry, guys. We're just going to block 11 political opposing parties to me. But we're doing it to save democracy, okay? And then they'll go through a number of them, right? For life, they are a pro-Russian party, so they have to be banned, blah, 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 right? Here we go. Zelensky's information policy involves combining all national TV channels, the program content. I'm trying to find that clip here right away as I speak here, but... the program content of which consists mainly of information and or information analytical programs into a single information platform strategic communication to be called United News. Again, isn't this what it was already anyway? Reuters noted that unlike Saturday, privately owned Ukrainian media outlets continue to operate independently. Oh, of course. Oh, that's good then. It's all good. Don't worry about it. Zelensky said... The measure was necessary to combat Russian misinformation and tell the truth about the war. Of course it is. I'm trying to... Don't we have that on our Telegram? I thought we had that clip on our Telegram. Is that it? No, okay. I'll find it in a moment. It's just aggravating. I know I had it here, that clip. It's just perfect right here. All right. Anyway, we'll see. Did someone delete that? Maybe that's what happened. Oh, there it is, right there. Okay, let me download that real quick, and we have to play that. It's just gold in terms of how MSNBC are pushing this, right? Here we go. Okay. And, of course, the other thing that happened while we're waiting for that to download is this. Check this out. We didn't cover that at the time, but this could be a good reminder here. Ukraine holds its bigger ever gay pride parade. Okay. And when what was the date on this then? Well, it was right after Zelensky got elected, right? Sunday's march was the first since the election of Ukraine President Zelensky. And it says here, huge crowds, including Western diplomats, have marched through Kiev for the city's annual Gay Pride Parade. Authorities deployed a heavy police contingent and National Guard members to protect the participants. Good stuff, right? You can't make that up. All right, let me see if this clip works here. Check this out here.
He's gone from being someone who, in a month, who no one, basically 99.99% of the world had no idea who he was, literally. Right. And the tiny percentage who knew who he was thought he was a clown, basically. Like the political, international, foreign policy cognoscenti kind of looked down on him. That the almost universal admiration to go from nowhere to being compared to Churchill and Roosevelt, as you are properly doing, Joe, is just one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen. And Vladimir Putin, by being Darth Vader, made a world where there could be a Luke Skywalker on the global stage. But then you have to step into that role, and you can't diminish either one of those things. The stakes have to be high, the opportunity has to be there, and then you have to meet the moment. But I don't think that's all that it requires. I think after you've met the moment while you're doing it, which he is every day, with fortitude and bravery and perseverance and resilience and moral leadership, you also have to figure out a way to tell people about it, right? And I think the way in which this small team of mostly ex-television producers who worked with him...
Whoa, big giveaway, right? What is this about? It's just wag the dog, right?
For years in Ukraine, have fashioned the most sophisticated political communications operation I've ever seen in real time. Every single choice they've made has been brilliant and pitch perfect. And they have played it. They understand that in this world we now live in, this very complicated, fragmented media landscape we occupy, that you got to play it high and low. You got to play insurgent and establishment. You got to do the interview with Lester Holt, but you also got to be on TikTok. You got to be everywhere all at once. He's out there.
Gay.
Speaking English, he's speaking Russian. He's transmitting on Telegram all day long, messages to different audiences. And then this week, we saw him do this global tour for Hearts and Minds, you know, the spring training games in Canada and the British Parliament, and then coming to the big stage of America. And again, with a perfectly executed 16-minute speech with video in the middle of it and a switch to English on the back end. I just don't think I've ever seen anything more masterful
at purely the level of
performance. Not just a performance, again, got to be a hero to look like a hero. But man, he's done he and his team have done an incredible job making the case for their people and using every media tool and understanding the world we now live in terms of media and digital technology, as well as anybody I think ever that we've ever seen.
Ever. No, and it is.
You hear her laughing there too, Mika, right? It's Brzezinski's daughter, right? I think we've ever seen. This is amazing. It's incredible, right? The case for their people and their beauty. Look, I'm okay with all that. It's not that, but it's amazing how they're like, it's the same thing that happened with Kurdistan and the Kurds and stuff, right? Foreign Policy Journal, which is like shitting on Western nationalism over and over and over again at every turn. All of a sudden, like, look at how beautiful their people and their nation is. And it's like, you know, borders now and all this cringe shit. But the takeaway here, of course, is just how managed this is in the press. Just how, I mean, how outrageously the propaganda just around the whole thing. And the fact that there's like, it's TV producers behind all of this. And they're admitting this, swooning over this guy. And they think he's like Luke Skywalker and Putin is Darth Vader. Look, we try to do that here. We try to take a balanced view that it's like, I mean, there's plenty to criticize about, you know, Putin and Russia and stuff, and that should be pointed out. But I mean, it takes like 101, like just basic tier shit here to figure out like where the majority of the propaganda is coming from for us in the West, right? It's the State Department, NATO, Western Pentagon, DOD. Side, which is using Ukraine as a proxy, right? Even was it Leon Panetta or something recently? Was he ex CIA head or something? I forget his exact position, right? But high up there, basically say, oh, whatever they say, this is a proxy war. We are using Ukraine to do a war, to inflict a long and costly and painful war on Russia, just like they did in Afghanistan prior. Where they invented the Mujahideen, right? And again, then that terrorist group went rogue, apparently, right? Questions about that. But regardless, it's always this constantly this thing that they take in a new group or invent a group, or they use them, they arm them, they fund them, they provide them with weapons and stuff and have them fighting their enemy. And then eventually either they take them out and they become the target, which I think is going to happen with Azov and some of these other nationalist groups in Ukraine, unfortunately. You know, but so they're being used. That's absolutely true. But yeah, they think this is a Marvel comic book. That's the level of these guys now. What was his name again? Heinemann? John Heilman. Heilman. John Heilman. Regular MSNBC contributor. I've seen this egghead a number of times there. Archie says, and I pulled this up, Archie, because you reminded me here. You reminded me of what's going on, right? If Dave Rubin and his husband molest their two children, then it's that considered incest. Don't mean to laugh. This is a serious matter. It could be a renewed cultural tradition that Susan Agukark, who's that? I don't think I know that name. Talked about mustn't judge. So yes, this did happen, right? And it was a couple of people pointing this out. Like Mark Dice was one of them. This is actually a screenshot from his video here. How all these supposed conservatives, right, who speaking about the, you know, the absent father in the family and how much problem, that's like, you know, that's what covert code for talking about blacks, basically, right? That's kind of what that is. You know, the missing father, that's what's creating the problems. And if we just had a stable family, all these problems would go away. And it's like, well, maybe not, right? But the point is, super supportive, right? Rubin did a tweet and, like, you know, Blaze and all these conservative pundits, like, oh, congratulations, this is great, you know, kind of thing. That's what conservatives are, right? That's where they are. And that this is now completely correct. Not a problem. There's no problems with this. Same with Peter Buttigieg, right? That he did it recently too with his husband. But who is Susan Aglukark? I've not heard of her. I got to Google that, which I did right here. Actually, I didn't. I think I brave searched it. Manitoba, raised Everett, Northwestern Territories, endured sexual abuse as a child and has been vocal about the issue. Some common First Nations. I've actually not heard of her before, so that's a Canadian Canuck reference there. I got to look into that. But anyway, thank you for the reminder about the Dave Rubin thing. Prager, you and the Blaze go full woke. Check out Mark Dice's video on that. It was pretty good, actually, talking about all these conservatives, right? They're just like, oh, this is great now, not a problem, right? A throuple, right? A throuple made history with their first child. Here's what their lives are like. These people, right? Matt Walsh. What's her name? Oh God, it's all these cringy people. But anyway, Mark Dice. Yeah, but I guess this guy too. Mike Ice Close Apart Cernovich did congratulating everyone too. There's nothing left. No mother in the home family. Oh, it's totally fine. Don't worry about that. Thank you, Archie, for the. So is it incest? That's the question. Well, this was my question. That's what I was going to get to. Obviously, they're not using. Obviously, they're not using the female component here, right? For this, they had to buy that, right, from someone, from presumably a donor, unless it's someone they know or something. But I assume it's just an egg donor. But the question I had is the sperm to produce this baby from either one of these two guys? And then to answer your question, Archie, yes, then it would be incest if they molest any of those children. Otherwise, technically, no, then it would just be a good old-fashioned pedophilia. But look, we're on our way there. The acceptance is we're very close, right? So give him a little bit of time, Archie. We'll be right there. All right, switching back into some of the absolute hysteria regarding, you know, Russian stuff. Check out this one. We put on our Telegram. I think I tweeted it out too. Orla, which is a Swedish milk producer, right? They have a product called kefir, which is basically like a, you know, like a soured milk. It's like a, not yogurt. It's like more that, you know, kefir, right? But I don't think it actually is kefir, because kefir, I think, is, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that not like a seed or something? It's like a, It's like a different type of grain or something that you produce it with. It's, maybe you put dairy in it afterwards. I'm not sure. But anyway, beyond the point. This milk producer, this dairy producer, Arla, stopped selling this product because the packaging contains Russian onion domes, right? They're kind of Eastern looking, almost like Turkish looking. I kind of like them in a way. They do look somewhat cool, right? But they're prominent in Russia, right? The Orthodox churches, I think, right? Some of the government buildings have that too, right? The Red Square there, whatever. The Kremlin. No, does the Kremlin have those? Maybe it doesn't. But anyway, so they stopped selling that because it was considered inappropriate. However, the kefir is produced in Sweden, consists entirely of Swedish raw materials. In other words, there's not a single ounce or drop or what have you of anything that is Russian in these things beyond the drawing on the package. I mean, it's not from that drawing is not from Russia. It's just depicting something which you can find in Russia. But you know that it doesn't stop them. We got to stop selling this anyway. So temporary ban on those products, which is just insane, right? So Russia has gone on to restrict access to Google News. This kind of circle has continued, right? Which is pretty crazy. And I mean, we're in a bad state in the West too. Check this out. Not that this might be any better, to be honest, at the end of the day. We'll see where this goes. It's too early to tell. But remember those movies back in like... the mid 80s, 90s, right? On the Hudson, right? Wasn't that, what's his name again? The really hairy short guy. What's his name? He died. Well, he committed suicide a while ago. I can't remember his name now. Anyway, defecting, right? That was a big thing. Defecting from the Soviet Union and going to freedom, free America, right? Kind of thing. Well, now you are beginning to see a reversal of that, where you basically have one of the guys that were roped into the January 6th Capitol riot, whatever you want to call it, that actually is going to Belarus because he'd been granted refugee status there. You can't make this up. Belarus has officially granted refugee status to Evan Newman, an American citizen who was facing potential decades in prison for taking part in a rowdy protest at the Capitol on January 6th. U.S. citizen Evan Newman received refugee status in Belarus. Belarusian Telegraph Agency reported Tuesday on Twitter. The document was handed to him in the Department of Citizenship and Migration and Internal Affairs Directorate of the Brest. Is that in Belarus? Brest is in Belarus? I guess that's old... Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that like old Prussian German territory, maybe? Anyway, Brest, I thought that was... Oh, anyway, the Brest Regional Executive Committee said on March 22nd. Interesting. U.S. citizen Evan Newman, who stormed the American Capitol a year ago, received refugee status in Belarus. He wants to take his family from the United States. There are several criminal charges against him in the U.S. He stated that he feels safe here and plans to do business. I don't know. It's just something... it's something funny with it. The Belarus One anchors described Newman. It's Neumann now. It changed from Newman to Neumann? He's from the same tribe, someone says. Is that regarding him? Okay, Newman flipped to Neumann. Okay, all right. Neumann is a simple American whose stores were burned down by members of the Black Lives Movement, who was seeking justice, asking inconvenient questions, but lost almost everything and is being persecuted by the U.S. government, the AP reported. Newman could be heard highlighting how Capitol protesters were being tortured in jail. Capitol protesters are not only being tortured, but also racially abused by sadistic jail guards who are black because the protesters are white, and they're locked in solitary confinement and held indefinite detention. These are grave human rights abuses by any measure. Remember how they protested against the Abu Ghraib and stuff? And of course, that sucked. That was disgusting, right? Not a peep from these leftists or anything now. No, torture them, kill them all, hang them high, right? That's what they want. If Newman was riding against the government in Belarus or Russia, He would be hailed by our government as a pro-democracy protester. If he was rioting for Black Lives Matter, he would have escaped all charges and potentially been handed millions of dollars. That's right, getting access to bail funds and all that stuff, right? But because he was opposed to the DC regime, he was aggressively overcharged and threatened with decades in prison. A September 2021 poll found that half of Americans believe January 6 suspects are political prisoners. Yeah, because they are. That's why they believe that. So there we go. Official defection, right? Or defects. No, it's not right the word. people are defecting to the Soviet bloc. Is that just what we should call it now, maybe? The Soviet bloc, the ex-Soviet bloc for human rights abuses in the free West, right? Yeah, on the Hudson. Check that out. It was a big movie, right? Robin Williams. Thank you, Omicron. That's right. Robin Williams was in that one. Yeah, I remember he was like in a store and, well, look at all the products and still walking around. And he wanted to he ran away from the plane or something at the end. Well, they're going to board and go back to Soviet Russia. All right. So we have some kind of dumb comments, but also some based comments from Assad, right? You cannot Mossad the Assad. And actually, you know what? Let's do this one first, because it will take us into the territory here. You know, we've talked many times about how they're the Nazis. They're the real Nazis. He's acting like Hitler. Well, they're funding the Nazis. You know, that kind of stuff, right? So here's CNN here. Hitler could not defeat our friend Boris, but now Putin has killed him. The work week at the Buchenwald Memorial, which honors the lives lost at the Buchenwald Nazi concentration camp, began Monday with a shock. In the morning, we received the news from Ukraine that our friend Boris Romanchenko, a survivor of the Buchenwald and three other concentration camps, had died. They weren't very efficient then, were they? There's three of them? Anyway, had died when a Russian military struck his multi-story apartment built in Kharkiv, right? Was that another missile gone haywire? Another missile defense system we don't know, right? That could very well be what it was. Romanchenko was 96 years old in the concentration camp. He had fought with his fellow Russian prisoners against the SS. And then they go, so basically, you know, to summarize for you here, not even the Nazis could kill him, but now Putin came in and finished the job. That's what they're saying, right? So that's the kind of headlines you're getting here. In the West, Putin is Hitler. So here, switching over to Assad now. You cannot Mossad the Assad. He's actually doing pretty well. He's going on trips and all kinds of crazy stuff, right? what is this democratic West in which hundreds of millions of people live, but which has only one opinion? Was one of the things he said. Now, he said some cringe stuff. We have a clip first where he's talking a little bit about the thrown around the Nazis thing, right? And because of Azov and stuff, and yes, it's a reality. I'm not trying to say that Azov doesn't exist or stuff, but again, kind of small role if you compare to the other forces that's behind using Ukraine, in my opinion. But let's begin with this one and hear him talk about this. But he does make some good points, though, right? Again, juxtaposing these things of, like, you know, supposedly these Nazis are now working together with Zelensky, which Assad says, which he's a Zionist Jew, right? What's happening here? How does this work? How does this pan out? We saw the same thing back in 2014 with the coup, and even earlier, right? We saw some of these, the Svoboda, at the time, the Svoboda Party, the leader there, went up and, you know, entered into relationships with, I mean, if you think they're Nazis, that would be have a problem with Jews, but I guess not. The now they can work with. Anyway, let's play the this clip here.
Subtitle. إذا كانوا يلبوا المصالح فهم أصدقاء إذا كانوا يقفوا ضد المصالح فهم أعداء يعني المبادئ صفر لكن آخر حقيقة وهي من أشد الحقائق قبحا وقل من الناس تعرف عنها هي كذبة أن الغرب ضد النازية وأن الصهيونية ضد النازية. القلة تعرف بأن النازيين في أوكرانيا وهي منظمات نازية عملت بشكل وثيق مع هتلر أمنيا وعسكريا وعقائديا. عندما انتهت الحرب العالمية الثانية أخرج القادة البعض منهم إلى أوروبا والبعض منهم إلى أمريكا. وفي الخمسينيات طالبت CIA الإدارة الأمريكية أن يرفع الحظر عن هذه المجموعات النازية لأنها ضرورة لأمريكا في أوكرانيا التي كان جزء من الاتحاد السوفيتي.
Now here's the interesting part. Check this out here.
ما يؤكد هذا الكلام اليوم، هذا الكلام التاريخي، أن زيلينسكي هو صهيوني يهودي ولكنه يدعم المنظمات القومية المتطرفة التي قاتلت في الحرب العالمية الثانية عندما دخل هتلر وشارك جزء منها في المذابح ضد اليهود. فكيف يكون هذا الصهيوني اليهودي داعم لهذه المنظمات؟ والغرب يدعم هذه المنظمات التي تسمى اليوم منظمة أزوف اليمينية، وإسرائيل الصهيونية التي تجتر ذكرى البكاء على ضحايا المحرقة تدعم زعيما يدعم النازية التي قتلت اليهود. هذا يؤكد بأن الغرب يكذب في كل ما يقول، والغرب لا يهمه سوى أن يسيطر على العالم، أن يتحكم بالعالم، وأن ينهب الموارد ويملأ خزائنه بالأموال.
All right, there goes. So Memory, right? They're actually horrible. An outlet that like they had all like a bunch of shit about us on there and stuff, like what hosts we use and all, like to, obviously to encourage like takedowns and hacks and all that kind of stuff. I think they're run by, I think they're operated by an Israeli, by the way. So of course they always keep an eye on what do they talk about in Arab countries, right? But he makes a good point. There's some stuff. It's like, yeah, I know how important the Azov is in relation to the much bigger animal of Western NATO sponsorship. But it is still, we've mentioned many times, bears repeating, it's very interesting how they just completely look the other way because they can use these group to advance their own agenda. And they will use them. They will use any ideology, as I said, anything they can. It's not about ideology. It's about winning at the end of the day, and it's about taking over every single country, every single group, to just homogenize everything. Global homo, use whatever you can. We'll deal with that problem later if there's some nationalistic group or something like that, right? All right, so here's the second clip I want to play too, which is kind of the basis of the article here from Information Liberation regarding, what is this democratic West in which hundreds of millions of people live but which has only one opinion, right? Check out this clip here. Subtitles again.
حرية التعبير والرأي وهي أحد أهم الأسس التي يتباهى بها الغرب فقد سقطت بالهاوية. فعلى الأقل منذ أتى جورج بوش الصغير منذ حوالي 20 عام والعالم الغربي كله برأي واحد والكل يتحرك بنفس الاتجاه. حكومات، لوبيات، شركات، وسائل إعلام، ومؤخراً وسائل التواصل الاجتماعي. ما هذا الغرب الديمقراطي الذي يعيش فيه مئات الملايين من البشر ولكن ليس فيه سوى رأي واحد؟ عندما يغضب أو تغضب أمريكا من سوريا فيصبح فجأة كل الرأي هو رأي واحد ضد سوريا وبنفس المصطلحات. عندما يريد أن يدافع عن الصهيونية وهذا شيء مستمر فكل الكل يتحدث بلغة واحدة. ومؤخرا عندما غضبوا من روسيا وسمحوا بالعنف تجاهها فأيضا كان برأي
حقيقة
حرية الرأي وحرية التعبير هي أن يكون لك رأي واحد متطابق مع الغرب. هذه هي الحقيقة.
Yep, it's a singular voice, right? And again, we can see that even in Ukraine now too, like just outlaw opposition parties, marginalize the media with one voice, there can be no other differing opinion, that kind of stuff. So he's doing good. I mean, Assad has survived a lot. I mean, the fact that he's still there is incredible. It's amazing in considering what they tried to do, right, to his country. The white helmets and stuff. And again, I think there are a lot of parallels between Syria, and Ukraine. I would assume it's even worse in Ukraine because you have already so much Western meddling and interference with it, right? So anyway, Assad shocked the West with his historic visit to the UAE last week as well. Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid welcomes Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Dubai. This is marking President Assad's first visit to an Arab country since 2011. That's really when the war, I mean, it's been issues before, but like that's really when it started, picked up steam, right? Very glad to see how Syria has defeated all the terrorists and Islamists who tried to destabilize the country. And of course, who was behind that? Who paid the, who's again supplying the forces and the weapons and all that stuff, right? God bless Syria. So they're seething, I guess, at this. The fact that they're doing well. He's going and meeting with other Arab nations. Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed receives Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in the United Arab Emirates. The State Department was left sobbing. The U.S. State Department said he was profoundly disappointed and troubled by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's official visit to the UAE. We urge states considering engagement with the Assad regime to wait. They still call it a regime, right? It's still, what was it, 90% the vote or something like that? The Assad regime to weigh carefully the horrific atrocity which the regime and the Syrians over the last decade, as well as the regime's continued efforts to deny much of the country's access to humanitarian aid and security. Yeah, I remember when you dropped weapons in with your U.S. aid packages. Remember that? I don't know. We're just giving it to the moderate rebels. And then it ended up in the hands of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra Front. And as Assad said, you know, many times, oh, they're Al-Qaeda, right? Speaking about the white helmets. They shaved their beards. The information is all on the internet. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said these things. According to Reuters, Price added that the trip was an apparent attempt to legitimize Assad. So true. We all know the only true legitimate ruler of Syria is Juan Guaido. That's right. That's a good joke there at the end. All right. So good stuff, right? Jimmy Fallis says over on Entropy Stream, tucking, regarding the tucking promotion to the kids at the Portland Hospital there, isn't that the hemorrhoid scene in Ace Ventura? I actually had to pull that up. This one. Sean Young, remember that? Yeah, that's Ace Ventura right there. I think she played a guy in the movie, right? And then she was tucking it or something. But they showed that there was something with that, right? The hemorrhoids thing, or whatever that really was. Well, she looks pretty good there. We had her on the show. Check out that show, by the way. It was kind of interesting, right? That's the Blade Runner gal. She was heavy into conspiracy. This is back in 2012, May 6, 2012. Put an interview up with her. check that out. Pretty interesting. She was quite a bit of stuff. I haven't seen or heard from her in many years, so I'm not sure what she's into. But she was heavily criticized because she spoke out about conspiracy and stuff. And she, of course, saw some things with producers over there in Hollywood, right? So check that out. We talked about Blade Runner and Dune, her roles and what she experienced there, and her kind of waking up to a lot of stuff, right? I mean, it's some other woo-woo stuff in there too, but it's still kind of fun. So check that out. It's up in redhousemembers.com right now from 2012. Good stuff. All right, thank you, Jimmy, for reminding us about that little tidbit regarding the hemorrhoids here. Ace Ventura was kind of, there were somewhat like funny movies, right? Wasn't there? There were somewhat okay, I think. Anyway, all right. Back on track. We're over here. Okay, so back on the issue with let's do this. Let's play some clips that we've seen from the Russian side, which is clearly very gay. We can have a balanced view, ladies and gentlemen. We don't have to have this view that we need to pray for Russia as they're bombing Ukrainian targets and killing the Nazis or whatever it is, or that somehow by bringing these, I saw a clip and I was looking for it. Was his name Ramzan Kadyrov, right? The Chechen Muslim Well, it looks white. You know, you look at his soldiers like, well, I was looking for that clip and I couldn't find it again. I should have saved it at the time, but he walks around, he's traveling somewhere. Right. It's great to see these guys, you know, going into Europe and, yeah, killing the nationalist in Ukraine. Yeah, that's great. That's great. It's fantastic. I loved it. We love to see it. Love to see Muslim armies invading. Anyway, he was with his other, you know, almost a team, a battalion there, his other military guys. And it was like, yeah, tell us your name. I could understand enough what they were saying. Like, oh, it's Ahmed Muhammad. You know, it's like, yeah, this is, I don't know. This is, all right. Anyway, you get the point. Not a big fan. But here they are. Servicemen of the LPR, that's the Luhansk Public People's Republic, their militia, or as they call it, Russian separatists, raising the flag, the so-called Banner of Victory, alongside the Luhansk People's Republic flag over the administration of occupied Rubinsk. The same flag was raised over Berlin 75 years ago after the Red Army raped and pillaged their way through Eastern Europe. Great. Here's more. Once again, somewhere in Ukrainian territory on the front lines, a V-marked column of tanks from Russian Federation Armed Forces were spotted flying the Soviet Union flag on its vehicles instead of the Russian Federation one. The Soviets are liberating them from the Nazis again. I guess that's what's happening here. While the other side is NATO sponsored, and as far as I know, it's not some. Are they commies? Are they communists? This is like some symbolic like echo of history, right, or something. Like, we got to show this. Look, I get it. It could be just like the one tank or something, and it was, you know, it's not a big deal, or whatever. But it's been quite a bit, right? We have some more footage here. Here's from. Let me see here. This is back in February 27th. The Russian armed forces in Melitopol lowered the national flag of Ukraine, and it's in its not in its place, but on to the right of that, you can also see the victory banner, the banner of the Soviet Red Army and their 150th Rifle Division. And it was raised atop the National Socialist Germany's Reichstag in Berlin, which marked the end of World War II and started the process of so-called denazification in Germany. Because that was great, good times, ladies and gentlemen. But it's to the right there. You can see it there, right? Flopping in the wind, right to the right there. Right up there. There it is. Right there with a hammer and sickle on it. And here's some other tanks. A Russian Army T-7B3 tank with a roof screen marked Z, flying the Soviet flag as they're driving around the Dnieper, the river. All right. So make of that what you will, but that's the sides now. That's, you know, you got to make a choice. Make your choice. The gay NATO Western forces, you know, funding Ukraine and having Ukrainians die on the front line. Or the echoes of the Soviet Union. Like, no, I I refuse. False dichotomy. Look, I get that, like, the desperation of how rotten and bad the West is, right? And so you kind of like, oh, well, then you have to support the other team or whatever. But it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of sick of it at this point. Okay. But there's plenty of hysteria, though. Going back to a story here. Putin's bombers could devastate Ukraine, but he's holding back. Here's why. Interesting story here, right? As destructive as the Ukraine war is, Russia is causing less damage and killing fewer civilians than it could, U.S. intelligence experts say. Russia's conduct in the brutal war tells a different story than the widely accepted view that Putin is intent on demolishing Ukraine and inflicting maximum civilian damage. And it reveals the Russian leader's strategic balancing act. If Russia were more intentionally destructive, the clamoring for U.S. and NATO intervention would be louder. And if Russia were all in, Putin might find himself with no way out. Instead, his goal is to take enough territory on the ground to have something to negotiate with while putting the government of Ukraine in a position where they have to negotiate. Understanding the thinking behind Russia's limited attacks could help map a path towards peace, experts say. In nearly months since Russia invaded, dozens of Ukrainian cities and towns have fallen, and the fight over the country's largest cities continues. United Nations human rights specialists say that some 900 civilians have died in the fighting. U.S. intelligence puts that number at least five times U.N. estimates, and about 6.5 million Ukrainians have also become intentionally displaced. That's 15% of the entire population, half of them leaving the country to find safety. And then, of course, they get to the U.K., and they're suspected of being terrorists because Russian female spies are going to infiltrate and pose as Ukrainian women refugees. And, therefore it's going to be bombings, right? Bombing attacks in the UK, right? They're going to wreak havoc. We talked about that in the latest Week in Warrior show. So check that out if you want to find out more. Absolutely crazy. So it is interesting, though, that they could do more damage. But apparently they have not, right? And they could do a lot more. Close Putin ally warns nuclear dystopia is on horizon if U.S. destabilizes Russia, right? So we're like teetering right here now. It's absolutely crazy how they continue to push this. And it could be really bad. It could be really bad. So we hope that the people involved reach some kind of sanity. I don't know how that's possible. It's all insane. Our leaders are insane. They're insane on all sides. They're not, you know, they're just exacerbating the problem. They're pushing, they're antagonizing. There's things they could do, but they just don't want to do it. And then you have Zelensky on one side just continuing to hype it up and continuing to ask for NATO support and Western support and more weapons and more volunteers. And, you know, all we get is a bunch of white guys dying on the front lines. It's absolutely horrific, right? Okay. So, of course, we've talked about this, but just another emphasis on this here. The gas prices is going insane. Here's one in California. I mean, this is not the norm, but it's still, you know, in California now, they are reaching European prices, some European countries' prices. Highest price I've seen so far, in Gorda, about 30 miles north of San Simon on California Highway 1. We have a regular unleaded for $8.29 a gallon. Unleaded plus for $8.69. Is that what it is? Yeah. And then premium unleaded, $9.29. Shit. That's bad. That's really bad, right? That's actually pretty bad. But again, it's close. Here's the Swedish gasoline price median, right, from globalpetroprices.com. Gallon-wise in USD, $8.54. So we've had this from some time. It's gone up a little bit recently, but like we've had these high prices, right, for a while. This is not new, and this is the normal. This is the highest you can find in the highest charging state, California. This is the median in Sweden. France, not far behind. If you take it in US dollars, $8 and almost 1 cent per gallon. The price of gas in Europe exceeded $1,350 per 1,000 cubic meters after the order of Russian President Putin to supply gas to unfriendly countries only for rubles. Interesting. So that means the U.S. petrodollar coming to an end is the collapse soon. Right? You have India now, one of the third largest gas importer, I think, oil and gas importer, who's now paying Russia, I think. They're entering a deal with them, and they're doing it in rubles, I think. The April futures price at the TTF hub in the Netherlands rose to $1,353 per 1,000 cubic meters, or about 118 euros per, what is that, milliwatt hours based on the current euro-dollar exchange rate. ICE prices are present in euros per milliwatt hour. Okay. Since the beginning of trading, the price of gas has increased almost 20%. Earlier on Wednesday, that's I think news from today, Putin said Russia would refuse to accept payments for natural gas suppliers in compromised currencies, interesting, including dollars and euros, and would move to payments in rubles. The head of state stressed that future changes in gas contracts with unfriendly countries will only affect the currency of payments. It will be changed to the Russian rubles, right? So that's if the Eurozone will wants to continue buying oil and gas from Russia, they're going to have to buy in rubles. We're seeing a realignment, folks. That's what we're doing. Huge realignment. It's crazy, right? So, of course, what's coming in the wake of this is summed up by this, because we've talked about the Haber method, we've talked about fertilizer, we've talked about the hydrocarbons that goes into this process. When price of that goes up, everything else goes up, including food prices, including feed prices for animals, which means less animals, which means less meat, which means what? I don't know. Lentils? If we're lucky, maybe lentils? Do we have lentils? Do we have bugs? Do we get anything at the end of this? Is there anything left on the shelves? I don't know. It could be too early to tell. But there's some Redditors who are very excited about this. And of course, this became a meme because of the Bloomberg story, right? It was this article ultimately. Inflation stings most if you earn less than $300,000. Yeah. So how much is that? 94% in the U.S. maybe? I don't know. Here's how to deal. Look at this. Look at these. Let them eat lentils. Take the bus. Of course. Of course you got to take the bus, right? Do it for Zelensky. That's what it's about now. take your bike. Remember some of the memes that were done, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Fight Putin. Ride a bike. Go on the bus. Don't buy in bulk. Yeah, because what? Bulk is usually not cheap. You get it cheaper, right? If you buy bulk, you get the items cheaper. You might have to fork out more money right away. Sure. But you make money at the end of it. Why do they say that? Because they don't want you to buy bulk, because then things will start running out. That's why. Try lentils instead of meat. Try lentils instead of meat. Okay? Do you get it? And then finally, nobody said this would be fun. Okay, well, we didn't agree to this, okay? We didn't say yes to any of this. The World Economic Forum issues ominous warning over coming food crisis, recommends more sustainable diets. Did you see the ratio Bloomberg just earned for a tweet which recommends getting used to lentils instead of meat, switching to public transportation, and avoiding buying things in bulk? What's the ratio now? Did they remove the replies? I didn't see the replies here. Quote tweets, 14,000. Yeah, sometimes you can see the replies too, I think, right, based on the replies. Anyway, the piece written by economist Teresa Gildarducci recommends that families earning under $300,000 per year consider switching to public transportation and branching a veggie diet and rethinking the costly pet medical needs. That's right, euthanize your pet. All right. Unsurprisingly, Garducci and the far-left New School for Social Research that she works for is affiliated with the World Economic Forum, of course, which, in addition to bragging about having infiltrated various governments, infamously suggested that people get used to eating bugs due to inevitable food shortages and why we need to give insects the role they deserve in our food system, right? You're own nothing, you'll be happy. All right, so here's the article here from... Where is it here? Here it is, right? The World Economic Forum, Ukraine, how the global fertilizer shortage is going to affect food security. There's been a number of these now. We've been over a couple of them, right? More people around the world will go hungry as a result of the pandemic, high fuel prices, and the conflict in Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine are also major producers and suppliers of fertilizers and the raw materials. Existing logistical issues with moving grain and food are likely to worsen. Disruptions will put further pressure on this year's harvest and lead to higher food prices. Even before the pandemic, the FAO estimated that 690 million people, or 9% of the world's population, were facing food insecurity. That's the summation of the World Economic Forum's take on this. And of course, again, this fits perfectly into everything that we've been talking about recently. This is not an accident. In fact, they're wheeling out a number of, fixes to this too. We'll look at that in a moment, but just to emphasize the issue, here's the UK. Free-range eggs are no longer available in UK supermarkets. Egg-laying hens have been kept indoors for more than 16 weeks over fears of avian flu outbreaks, right? So that also is an issue now. Still, it's avian flu. There's things back, you know, tons of issues and problems. Here's Germany. Supply no longer secured for the summer. GMO-free soy is hard to come by. That means that the poultry farmers in Germany are getting fewer laying hens. The German egg industry speaks of red alert against the background of massively restricted food supply chains and dramatic cost increases, especially for animal feed. The Federal Egg Association in Germany is sending an urgent wake-up call to politicians and the food retail trade. From summer 2022, at the latest, the supply of eggs can no longer be guaranteed, they write. Sheer existential fear among farmers. The latest developments in the global agricultural market are bringing the German egg industry to its knees. And I think they said something they had 12 to 16 weeks or something like that. And then they don't know what's going to happen. But bugs, of course, that's one solution, right? That's one way we can go get out of this. Just eat the bugs, lentils and bugs. Well, then there's this. If you still have them, we've talked about the synthetic meats, synthetic beef, Bill Gates funding these companies, farmland owner. Do you think he's going to grow any animal feed on his farmland? Probably not, right? But here's an option for you. If you're a little, what's the term? Is it peckish? Is that a term for fish? You know, because that's going to run out too, and you're going to be able to fish while China is doing massive trawls outside of your coastline. Gobbling everything up, you can just grow them in a lab. There we go. That's what it's the company's called. Just print them, 3D print them. You grow the cells in a vat, right? There's actually more of this here, too. This is back in 2021, so maybe by 2023 we can have 3D printed fish cells and protein, right? Well, here's another startup. I think this is from Hong Kong, actually. More from the World Economic Forum. Enjoy. Thank you. And I love that, too, that they ask at the end, would you eat these fish fillets, right? And then the comments are turned off on their YouTube channel. All right. So you can ask then. But of course, they're going to print it, right? They're going to print it. And they're going to, like these Israeli companies are printing the meat now. You're going to see bug protein farms, all that kind of stuff. And mark my words, but I think at some point you're going to see, it might not come out at first, but you know, you still need to feed the cells, right? Something to growing. I think right now they have some like solution or something, and barring them being able to produce this as well by like molecular combination in some lab or something, they're going to need something. And I'm not sure this is how absorption works or how you can convert things, but at the end of the day, you're not going to get, you don't get things for free, right? It's always that you need something in for it to produce something to come out of it, right? There's no free energy here. You can't do it, right? I think at some point they're going to start feeding, whether it's, or converting at least, or some kind of process using human dead bodies as feed for whether it's cells that are growing or whether it's actual other animals or something like that. We'll see, but that's my prediction. Basically, kind of a one step removed from Soylent Green. Remember the growing, Swedish chef / scientist was like, what's the reason we have a taboo around eating human meat? Remember that? I think he'll get there, right? And look, as they say in the video, this is a real issue. It's not that, but it's that the solution to it is awfully subversive, right? We do have too many mouths to feed, but it's not as hell sure that these bastards on these globalist organizations, that's going to decide for us who gets to stay and who gets to come. If they're committed, they could just take themselves out first then, right? But they won't do that. No, they fly around in their jets, they're on their yachts, they're enjoying life, lobster dinners, the finest caviars, the finest filet mignons, you know. Have you seen all the dinners at the EU, that the EU Commission and the Parliament has and stuff? Like, I mean, incredible waste as well. There's been like countless books written about this, especially when the UK had a long campaign, the Conservatives in the UK. They exposed the shit out of the EU before this was partially what led to them jumping ship, right? But yeah, so this is what's happening. These are the solutions that will be offered, and at some point, either human meat or humans will be feed for things that will lead to the meat that we will be able to buy and consume at lower levels. You'll see artificial, as they scale this, as I say, become cheaper and cheaper, and you'll see naturally grown or harvested meats become super expensive, right? A luxury, a delicacy, essentially. That's where this is going. I don't see any other way out of this. And also, at the same time, we're paying the price of looking away, of having not dysgenics that we have now, but actually eugenics, right? Having the most capable and best possible humans to run things and do it responsibly. You know, again, in the wake of this, you have conservatives fighting against abortion. And look, I get it. I don't like abortion either, killing babies and all those kinds of things, right? I'm not saying that that's good or that, oh, that's what we should do, whatever. But at the same time, in a time like, instead you should teach them not to have sex when they're in the window of becoming pregnant, for example, right? But why are they not doing that? Well, they're doing that because they want to experiment on the fetuses. They want that to be aborted. They need the stem cells from it. They want to do their creams. They want to do their chimeric experiments in deep underground labs somewhere. You know, who knows what they want to do with these fetuses that they extract. And now they're like raising, what was it, in the 48th week you can abort, and it's like, that's past full term. Like, what are you doing? There was some weird proposal like that. No, but I'm saying, if we do not take the responsibility, which I know these globalists, they're this is how they're reasoning, right? But they're disgusting and evil and wicked, and they're the worst people possible of taking this upon themselves and taking this into their hands. But again, that's why they're in the position they are, because they're the most unfit for leadership. That's why they're there, because the scum always rises to the top and to the surface. But we're going to pay the price for not taking responsibility, and therefore either nature will do it for us by having a colony collapse, which will be catastrophic, and we have to pay the price in a massive way, which we've never seen. I mean, levels of misery like we've never seen before. But we haven't done that. So because of that, because we haven't taken responsibility, we have either nature doing it, or nature is using a perverted, disgusting, ill-fitted so-called elite doing it for us. And that's what's happening. Right? The West largely has taken a lot of responsibility. We were told that it was wrong to have a lot of kids. You know, the median now is now below replacement levels, right? So it's not us doing it. We're, in fact, our numbers are going down, right? But they'll still blame white people for this. And everyone wants our civilization. Everyone wants the benefits of Western developments and civilization and all these kinds of things. And yet we're to blame for it all, right? All environmentalism, colonialism, and all these things. Then everyone else wants the fruit of this, right? And while our birth rates are declining, you have the third world largely exploding. You have a population that's at least projected to be around the 4 billion mark by the end of this century in Africa, just to do one example, right? And that is truly unsustainable. I don't think we can be more than, I don't know what the exact number is, but I think you have severe limitations on it, at least through the methods that we're using right now, like crop yield maximization, the Haber method, using hydrocarbons. And now we're walking away from that, and you're going to have a consequence of that. And that's what we're now witnessing. So it's absolutely just everything we should have done, we haven't done. We didn't take responsibility. We let these evil people run the show from the very top. We didn't depose them. We didn't organize against it. And now we're paying the price. It's coming back. The chicken's coming home to roost. And it's horrific. It's horrific seeing it. Absolutely horrific. Okay, so with that heavy topic to end on, it's just the reality of it. Look, there's a few things we're going to recommend here. I'm going to try to do some shows on this. What do we do to prepare fully? We've begun talking about this now, but we're going to do some more practical things. Try to do some more specific research, right? And there's other good resources out there, and we'll refer to those, and we'll give you guys hints and shortcuts and things. You know, where do we go? What do we do? It's all down to, of course, to where you are. Depends on how many people you have around you. It depends what network you have. It depends on, can you go out there and start, you know, starting to build relationships with the people around you, with farmers. Are you in a big city? Are you out in the countryside? Do you have property? Do you have not? But there's still things you can do. There's still things you can do to prepare, right? And that's what we want to help you with. So at some point here, we're going to do a little more focus on these things, some more hands-on, like, helpful tips and things like that. So that's something we have coming up as well. So it's not just, we don't want to just drop you off and say, oh, it's hopeless, that's it. You know, and a lot of you know already. You're already doing things. Probably not as much as you should. Neither are we, but we're getting there, okay? We're trying. We're doing the best we can, and that's a good start. It's not ideal, but as I say, perfect is the enemy of good, right? And it doesn't have to be perfect right away. It just have to be sufficient. It have to be good, right? All right. So more on that is coming, ladies and gentlemen. Little plug for some of the stuff coming up here then before we wrap up. Check out the latest Weekend Warrior show, of course. Good stuff up right now in redicemembers.com. We have some other exclusive material there for you guys as well. Lana did a recent video here on the dark and perverted roots of gender ideology. That's up exclusive at redicemembers.com. We had an interview with Jonas Nilsson yesterday. Check that out. The unelected globalist running the world. Talked a lot about much of the themes that we have been covering here now with the World Economic Forum, but Bill Gates, the COVID scam, the Klaus Schwab, you know, stuff. 2 hours on that, second hour just for members. Check that out. And then we also, of course, before that, we had the Bulgarian journalist talking about the biolabs in Ukraine. And that's been up on the Red House member section as well, an exclusive there for a couple of days. I think tomorrow we might get that up on the public channels if you cannot wait. But if you like what we do, if you want to support our work, do head on over there and get a membership, redicemembers.com. It helps to support the show. It helps to keep gas in the gas tank so we can keep moving. And that's important. Do not take us for granted. We need your support. We need your help. We need your memberships. We need your donations. We need you to consider donating. If you're already a member, you can donate still. If you're not a member, the best way, of course, to support us is to sign up for a membership, because that's the way you get something back as well. So you get content, you get access to more of what we do if you like our stuff, and then we get something back and we can continue as well, right? Subscribestar.com/redeyes. You can sign over up over there if you want to use a debit or credit card. It's only $10 a month. Look, that's what is that? If you go to California now, that's like 1 gallon of gas a month. I know it's California prices, but you get my point, right? 1 gallon of gas a month you give to us so we can literally keep things moving. Keep literally and figuratively gas in the tank so we can keep moving. That's what we need. EntropyStream.live/RedEyesTV. You can do it over there too, recurring, or you can do a one-time payment. And by the way, we have longer subscriptions available too. If you don't want to do Subscribestar or auto recurring monthly, you can do that through Entropy Stream. You can do it through the e-check option that we have for the U.S. audience, or the Cash App as well. A number of ways you can do it through crypto. You can send a check or cash in the mail. There's a number of ways you can do this. And again, I mean, it's like if you do a longer subscription, 2 years, it's like, what is that, down to $6, $20-something cents per month, as opposed to 10, so it gets cheaper the longer you get. So sign up over at redeyesmembers.com. Do not take us for granted. We need your support. We need you to sign up. It's up to you. If you don't help us out, if you don't support, we cannot keep doing this. We have to move on and we have to do something else. So we appreciate your support. We appreciate everyone helping out, donating over on Entropy Stream. You can also go to redeyes.tv/donate, find some links there as a way to help out and as a means. Look, I know everyone is scrambling and down in red, but we need your support. Without you, we cannot be here. So do consider signing up because it helps tremendously. So thank you so much, everybody. We do love you. Please stay safe, keep fighting, and we'll be back here soon with much more. We have, in fact, tomorrow, Kevin McDonald is coming up, so check that out. It'll go first on redassmembers.com. I think we'll do 2 segments with him, as usual, like we did with Jonas as well. So our members gets a little bit extra as well. But that's coming up tomorrow. And then, of course, we have Flashback Friday, as usual, on Friday. And then Weekend Warrior. We're also working on other videos as well, shorter scripted videos. Thank you, boys and girls. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you so much. Take care. We'll see you on the next one. See you later.
Do you love Red Ice? Want more? Get access to exclusive material by signing up for a Red Ice membership. You'll be able to watch Weekend Warrior, our flagship show, the second hour of interviews, and other special feature videos only for subscribers. Were you a member and we lost you along the way? Renew! We love and appreciate you guys and gals and cannot do this without you. Help us be a sane voice, a lighthouse in the sea of insanity. As times get tougher, as people are searching for answers, they're going to need content like Red Ice. A little of all your support can go a long way. Thank you.